So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking with you today about Parkinson's disease. And we have two guests, one with us now, and I think the other one may be well on the way. Let's hope so. Angel Hodgson of Sun Prairie is with us from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. She's president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson Disease Association. She also cares for her mother, who has Parkinson's disease. And one of the reasons, I guess, to talk about it today is to also to do a little publicizing, because there are many Parkinson's walkathons taking place in, I think it's 45 American cities. I know there's one in Madison coming up. We'll talk with her about that. And then hopefully Dr. Montgomery will be along as well. We'll talk with him as well about Parkinson's disease. Certainly, if you want to join in with a question or comment, you can at 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Angel Hodgson, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. How did you happen to become president of the Parkinson's Wisconsin chapter of the Parkinson's
Disease Association?
I'm trying to come up with all of the names here.
Wisconsin APDA. That's just easier. I got involved with the chapter just over a year ago because my mom has Parkinson's disease, and got involved last year, actually, just before our very first walkathon. It's a good cause. Had a lot of fun doing it. It's one way I can make a difference, in helping my mom out and other people in the Parkinson's community. And as things progressed, we had our first elections in our chapter this last September, and I got voted in as president. So here I am.
All right. So here, that's a good thing. I'm glad you're here. What does the chapter do? What is the purpose?
Our primary purpose is to support people in the community with Parkinson's, both patients and caregivers. Raise money for research. The walkathon that's coming up is our one required big fundraiser that we do for the National Association. And all the money we raise during our walkathon goes right to a national for research. Locally, we hold other events throughout the year. We've had bowl-a-thons and other sort of fun, small fundraisers. And everything else that we earn throughout the year stays locally here in Wisconsin for the chapter to use for local research to support the different support groups throughout the community and things like that.
So it's a way to kind of give back and help with the beating of this disease, which is, as you're experiencing firsthand with your mom, it's a tough thing to deal with sometimes.
It is. She was diagnosed about 8 years ago, relatively young. Just over 50 years old, 52 about when she was diagnosed officially. And my stepdad is the primary caregiver for her, but we live right in town, just, a few minutes away, so we're over there quite often and try to do what we can to help. But it's difficult to watch her progress through the disease. And when I have a young son that, wants to play with her and do fun things, things can get difficult sometimes.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Dr. Erwin Montgomery is joining us as well. And I'll let you join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Dr. Erwin Montgomery joining us is professor of neurology and director of the Movement Disorder Program in the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And he's also an affiliate scientist in the National Primate Research Center at UW-Madison, talking with us today about Parkinson's as well. And again, the number 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Dr. Erwin Montgomery, welcome. Nice to have you with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
How many people are affected with Parkinson's disease? Do we know? I have a good figure on that.
Well, we estimate that there's about 1.5 million Parkinson's disease patients in the United States, but that's probably an underestimate. We know that about 30% of patients are not diagnosed, so 30% of the patients out there have just never been diagnosed properly.
And the disease itself, if you think if you had the disease, you'd probably, it would be diagnosed. Talk a little about the disease itself and its progression and so forth.
Well, it starts off very insidiously. So it starts off very, very slowly and oftentimes can be quite advanced before the patient, family members, caregivers recognize it. So it's not unusual for patients to go years before the diagnosis is actually made. And it is a progressive disorder. It does get worse over time. But there are some things that we can do to help slow the disease progression. So it's very important that the patient be diagnosed as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I suppose if it's changing slowly, even if it's happening to you, if it's happening really slowly, you sort of adjust as things move along, and it is probably harder for an individual to diagnose.
Absolutely. You can look at your family member or your wife or your husband, and they don't seem to change, and then somebody who hasn't seen you in 15 years, they say, oh, my goodness, you've changed so much.
Yeah. Well, talk a bit more about the symptoms.
Some of the symptoms of Parkinson's disease, including a slowing down of movement, take longer to dress, eat, button buttons. Patients also tend to be more stooped in their posture. They may develop a slowness, a shuffling to their walking. They may have trouble with their balance. Some patients will develop tremor, although not every patient with Parkinson's disease has tremor. And sometimes that causes confusion for the diagnosis. I think one of the biggest problems is if I told you there's a 70-year-old gentleman who's a little bit stooped in his posture, shuffling a little bit, seems to slow down, you might think, well, that's just normal aging. But in actuality, that may be Parkinson's disease.
And it's important to get in there with that as early as possible with a diagnosis.
Absolutely, because there are now medications that can help slow the progression of the disease. And so obviously getting it sooner rather than later is going to be very important. We know from medication studies, research, that sometimes waiting even 6 months can reduce the benefit that the patient can get from treatment.
Ooh. What, do we know what causes it?
At this point, we don't know what causes Parkinson's disease. A substantial part of it is probably related to a genetic disorder that we have not yet identified for the majority of patients. Also, we know that things in the environment can predispose patients to develop Parkinson's disease. For example, if you grow up in rural Kansas around farming, you're more likely to get Parkinson's disease. So it's probably a combination of a genetic risk factor, but then you have to be exposed to something in the environment to actually cause the disease.
And so if there's a genetic factor involved here, then it could mean that it could pass from one family member to the next, or?
Absolutely. There are about 11 different genetic abnormalities that have been identified for certain families. And in certain areas of the world, the Middle East and North Africa, the genetic causes are fairly common. Here in North America, though, we estimate that only less than 3% have one of the genetic abnormalities that have actually been identified.
Well, we should take some questions. Again, if you want to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Rick in Appleton. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, bear with me on my phone here. I have a question with a stomach peg. Would that have anything critically to do with speech? That once you get the stomach peg put in, right now he has a baclofen pump, but he also had a stomach peg put in, and we're wondering why the speech is getting terrible.
Okay, maybe you could explain what he's talking about here with the peg and so forth.
Certainly, I believe the gentleman is referring to what is called a percutaneous enterostomy. This is putting a small hole in the stomach in through the abdomen. So you make a small hole, put a small tube directly into the stomach, and it provides an alternative way to feed patients. So some patients have a lot of trouble with swallowing, and it's not safe for them to take anything by mouth because we're afraid it'll get down into the lungs and cause pneumonia. So you can bypass that by putting a tube directly into the stomach. And I think the association with the speech problem is the same muscles in the throat that are involved in swallowing are also involved in speech. So these muscles have been affected for swallowing, and that's why he had to have the peg tube. But then those same muscles have been affected, and that's why the speech is also a problem.
Interesting.
So now with the anesthesia that was used, would that have any bearing?
Mm-hmm. Not likely, unless there was a complication from the anesthesia. But certainly the stress of having a PEG tube can certainly make Parkinson's symptoms worse. So that's not surprising. A patient may fall, get injured, develop a fever or an infection, and we find that their Parkinson's symptoms can get dramatically worse. Once the patient has recovered from that stress, from that infection, the Parkinson's symptoms often get a lot better.
And I'm sorry, but I should have mentioned before, he does not have any doings with Parkinson's disease. He's just a patient that had the stomach peg, and you basically cleared the answer that I was looking for. But what is there anything out there that can be done for his speech now, or is it going to be like that because he's he's not eating now through the throat? So now what?
What can be done? Sure, and I tell you what, we'll consider that, and we'll have some hopefully some answers for you after we take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Talking today about stamping out Parkinson's disease with our two guests, Dr. Erwin Montgomery, who is a professor of neurology and director of the Movement Disorder Program at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. Also with us today, Angel Hodgson of Sun Prairie, president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson's Disease Association. She also cares for her mother, who has Parkinson's disease as well. And I know she's going to want to talk about a walkathon that's coming up and some of the other ones and ways that you might get involved to help raise some money to help beat this darn disease. Certainly, if you want to join in with your own questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We'd be happy to get you on the line. And Dr. Montgomery, we had Rick in Appleton, who's, I believe, probably his father, had a procedure, a peg in his stomach, and seemed to have affected his voice, and wondered about whether or not there was help with his vocal problems. And you seem to think I'm sure, after listening to Dr. Daly earlier, who is from the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at UW-Madison, there are a lot of things that can be done.
Oh, absolutely. A lot depends on what the actual diagnosis is. But there are a lot of things that can be done, everything from strengthening exercises to actually injection of Teflon into the vocal cords. So there's a lot that can be done. It would be very important for that person to be thoroughly evaluated by an expert speech pathologist who specializes in voice disorders.
So that's, I think, for Rick in Appleton, find a speech pathologist who specializes in that and go from there. That's the best way to go. All right, let's go to Rick in Madison next. Rick, hello to you.
Hi. I've always been curious if there's any relationship or research being done on Parkinson's disease in relation to prion-type disorders like Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and CWD. And do we know definitively that the two conditions are completely unrelated?
All right. What do you think, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, that's a very good question, and there's actually a considerable amount of research looking at the possibility that prions can play a role in Parkinson's disease. At this point, since we don't know exactly what causes Parkinson's disease, we have to kind of be humble and entertain a large number of possibilities. There is actually a form of Jakob Creutzfeldt that the gentleman mentioned that can look very much like Parkinson's disease, and indeed I've had patients that I thought for sure had Parkinson's disease, and finally it turns out that they had Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. So sometimes these patients can present just like patients with Parkinson's disease. And as of yet, though, we have not established any firm link between prions and the type of Parkinson's disease that we routinely see in the clinic.
Mm. All right. Thanks for calling. Doug in Colfax, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hello, Larry. Thanks so much for your show.
Sure.
My father was diagnosed about 3 years ago. He's 76, and he's been his career with the Soil Conservation Service and in fields a lot, and I know there's been some question about farm chemicals possibly increasing the incidence of Parkinson's. And my second question is, he's got balance issues, of course, and falls some, and also has the beginnings of osteoporosis, and I was wondering if there's recommendations, because that's of pretty good concern to our
sure.
family.
Of course. What do you think, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, there is definitely an association between Parkinson's disease and living in a rural environment exposed to herbicides and pesticides. And in fact, it was quite interestingly, in the early 1980s, there was a compound called MPTP, which was a designer drug that produces profound Parkinsonism in laboratory animals and in humans. And that discovery was a remarkable benefit to research. And this MPTP is what we call a pyridine compound, and they're very, very ubiquitous. They're in various types of herbicides and pesticides. Also, there is a pesticide called rotenone that has now been shown to clearly produce Parkinsonism in laboratory animals. So, indeed, there may very well be a connection between the use of herbicides and pesticides in the rural environment. Again, we don't have a smoking gun type evidence yet, but certainly there's a lot of concern about that.
What about our caller's father has falls and osteoporosis onset?
Oh, that is a big worry. Older people with Parkinson's disease are likely to fall and develop complications like fractured hips and fractured skulls, and that obviously we want to avoid. In my own practice, what I do is often send these patients to our special falls clinic. We have a special clinic that's multidisciplinary, staffed by physicians, physical therapists, occupational therapists, and they thoroughly evaluate the patient's walking and can make recommendations about assistive devices that might be safe. You know, there's a tendency for these patients just to go to the drugstore and pick up a cane. That may not be safe. No. They really need to be evaluated by a professional. So I often refer patients to our falls clinic here at UW. And we're also now starting to see a lot of osteoporosis in older gentlemen, and now there are a lot of doctors prescribing vitamin D and calcium supplements for older individuals. Also, it's very important to make sure that the patient's Parkinson's disease is optimally treated. That will help to reduce the risk of fall and serious injury.
Thank you very much for calling, Doug.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Bill in Bayfield County, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I would like to ask the doctor, is there a relationship between myoclonus and Parkinson's?
Myoclonus is a symptom. It is a sudden jerking of the muscles. It can be due to any number of different disorders. So in it itself, it has nothing. There's nothing specific about it. It's like talking about a headache. A headache is a symptom, and a headache can be caused by many, many different things. Sometimes in some forms of patients with Parkinson's disease, we can see myoclonus, particularly a form of what is called nocturnal myoclonus, where in the middle of the night while the patient is asleep, they jerk or push or shove or strike out. Often patients don't complain about this, but their bed partner complains about it.
I would think, yeah.
And sometimes that can be related to the disease. Sometimes that can be related to the medications. And it's important to figure out which one's which. Sometimes we can do some things to help reduce the myoclonus.
Mm. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And Al in West B, we turn to you next. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's a great program. Very timely. 3 weeks ago this evening, my dad passed away from complications of Parkinson's disease. He'd suffered 24 years and aspirated different times, but the last week developed severe pneumonia. And it was a blessing to be with him when he passed on, holding his hand and talking with him, talking to him. He was a charter member of the Parkinson Support Group in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and which was a great help to him, and surprising to me that he did that as a conservative, stubborn, full-blooded Norwegian. Something that I kept pushing him to do, and they did in the support group also, is to keep exercising, physical exercise, and also throat and tongue and lip exercises in that upper portion of the body. And the last 6 months, but especially the last 2 and the last 1 month, it was just a steady decline in how he could speak. And then towards the end, the last couple of days, his inability to speak, but passed away on Tuesday. And the Saturday, we were still able to talk. It was difficult for him to speak, but I could understand him. But the support group was just terrific, and terrific care at the nursing home. And he also had a feeding tube put in last October because pureed food just basically sucked, really, for him.
Yeah.
And that is what allowed him to to live as long as it did because he wasn't getting the nutrition that he needed otherwise because of the difficulty swallowing and things. But it's a progressive disease, but he sure battled it very, very well for 24 years, and the doctors were amazed at how long he continued with such a low level of medication for that long time.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, Al, but I think I want to get some comments from maybe both of our guests. First to from Dr. Montgomery, a comment from you?
Yes, sir. My sincere condolences. And I have to say I've been specialized in Parkinson's disease for over 25 years from now, and I continually be amazed by the courage that our patients have. It is just absolutely breathtaking, the courage and fortitude. And even to this day, I learn so much from being with my patients. And over the years, many times the patients have become more friends than patients. It has been truly a privilege for me to care for patients with Parkinson's disease. And your points about the support groups are exactly right. We need more support groups. We need more people involved in support groups. I can't tell you how important those support groups are. And they make a huge difference to the patients and to their family members and ultimately to their medical care. The support groups are an important source not only of emotional support, psychological support, but information, knowledge. And I can tell you that a well-informed patient, a well-informed, educated family makes my job a whole lot easier.
Yeah. And Angel Hodgson, talk a little bit about this because you certainly as president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson Disease Association has had a lot of experience with us as well.
Yeah, we're involved with many support groups around the area. We have an information and referral coordinator at the UW, Jessica Hahn, and she's probably the best contact. She's got a website. We have a listing of all the local support groups. So depending on where you live around the area, you can call up, you can get involved. She has just an unlimited amount of resources that she can send to you for little to no cost at all. Many of her pieces of literature are all free from the National Association. So if you have a question about what exercise is good, about speech or speech therapy, or anything in general about young Parkinson's diagnosis, anything, she can get that information to you, and that's all listed on her website. And
do we have the website address?
We do. It's www.apdawi.org.
Run that by me once more,
www.apdawi.org.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Jessica, and she's a great resource that the chapter utilizes all the time.
And maybe this is the best time to also talk a little bit about the walkathon. Parkinson's walkathon
sure.
are taking place in 45 American cities, maybe even more.
The walkathon that we do here in Madison is going to be held at Easttown Mall. It's on April 15th. The registration's been open for a long time. You can go to Jessica's website that I just gave you or the chapter website that I also have to get a registration form. At 11 o'clock, registration begins at the mall. So if you've already registered, you can check in or you can register day of if you haven't had a chance to do so ahead of time. It's put on by Easttown Mall and Group Health Cooperative. They're big sponsors for us. We do it inside the mall, one, not to have to worry about the weather, but it's one of the things that the National Association promotes with their walkathons because so many of our patients want to be involved and want to also walk and bring their families, but not all Parkinson's patients are able to walk a mile or 3 miles or walk continuously for a long time. So by utilizing the malls inside, they can do a couple laps or they can do a partial lap and sit down and rest. And it's just kind of a nice environment to do that in. We have some entertainment. Bucky Badger and the cheerleaders are going to be there again. Last year, they were a big hit last year, so they'll be here again this year. We've got High Energy Mobile DJs going to be there, so we got some background music and lots of fun stuff going on. We have a silent auction, so there's lots of way to come out and support, either bring in donations or just come walk or just be a part of the whole event.
And that's Sunday, April 15th?
Yep.
So it's
registration starts at
up.
11. The walk itself goes from noon to 1, and we'll keep the silent auction open until 1:30.
And so, again, for some more information, go to that apdawi.org website.
And I have a chapter website, too, we can give out for chapter.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's www.wichapterapda.org.
Run that once more.
WI chapter.
Chapter, okay.
APDA.org.
APDA?
Mm-hmm. .org.
All right. I've got that written down.
All right.
We'll try and hang on to that. And Al, again, I'm sorry for your loss, but
Thank
it sounds
you,
like you had a great dad.
He did. He was a great dad. And we enjoyed listening to your program. And may I plug the lacrosse group?
You bet. Go right ahead.
Fourth Tuesday of every month from 2 in the afternoon until 4 at Gunderson Lutheran Hospital and clinics. And if somebody walks up to the information desk, they're a helpful group of people there, and they'll direct you to the program, and there's no charge. You get a little informational letter a couple weeks beforehand of what the meeting is going to be.
Oh, that's wonderful. Al, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. John in Winona, Minnesota, we go to you next. Hi, John.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Very interested in the program that you got going. A year and a half ago, at age 63, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, very subtle symptoms. Actually, what brought it on, or what took me to the doctor, was the fact that my voice started fading, particularly in stress situations. I'd lose my voice, kind of like I'm losing it now.
Mm-hmm.
But when I consulted with my doctor, I kind of had been led to believe that there was not much that could be done other than to take medication to look at the symptoms of the disease rather than to prevent the progression of the disease. So I'm encouraged to hear that there may be some things that we can do to retard the progression of it.
Mm-hmm.
I am on Sinemet. And unfortunately, in my opinion, the disease has progressed much faster than the doctors had indicated. I also do get something that I would call similar to the restless leg syndrome that I see medications advertised for. Is that a symptom also of Parkinson's? Is that a byproduct of Parkinson's? I guess would be one of my questions. I get it in the legs and in the arms, particularly in the evenings, sometimes mid-mornings.
Okay. All right. Let's turn to Dr. Montgomery. Go ahead.
Well, first, about medications to help slow the progression of the disease. Up until recently, this had been a fairly controversial subject. There was a study done in the mid-1980s that showed that if you took a medication called selegiline, which is what we call a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, you could slow the progression of the disease. But there was a lot of controversy about this. If you lined up 10 different neurologists, you'd get 11 opinions about whether it actually slowed the progression of the disease. My analysis of the data strongly suggests that it does slow the progression of the disease, particularly when used early. Also, the downside of using the selegiline is very, very small. In one study where 200 individuals got a sugar pill and 200 individuals got the selegiline, there were more complaints of side effects on the sugar pill than there was on the selegiline. So from my perspective, and it's an inexpensive medicine, from my perspective, it is well worth hedging your bets, as it were, and taking medicines like selegiline. This past July, we had another monoamine oxidase inhibitor approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration called rasagiline. And there the data is quite convincing that even waiting as much as 6 months in terms of taking this medicine can really cause the patient to deteriorate further and not to recover or to get better with medications if the medicine is even delayed for 6 months. Now we're going back and looking at the selegiline data, and I think more and more experts in the field are convinced that selegiline or rasagiline monoamine oxidase inhibitors can slow the progression of the disease. And it's quite interesting. These medicines were first discovered because I mentioned about the MPTP, that toxin that produced Parkinsonism. Well, you can actually prevent Parkinsonism in the laboratory animal by using these medications. So I think there's pretty good evidence. Also, a lot has changed in the management of Parkinson's disease over the last 5 years. A lot has changed, and we know that the decisions that are made early in the course of the treatment have profound implications for what happens down the road. And one thing that we have learned, that it is probably not wise to use medicines like Sinemet early in the course of the disease, because it greatly increases the risk of long-term complications. One of the most prominent long-term complications is what we call dyskinesia, or involuntary movements. And you only have to watch videotapes of Michael J. Fox to see how he's constantly writhing around. We know that your risk of developing that complication is much, much higher if you take medicines like Sinemet compared to alternatives, what we call dopamine agonists. So there's been quite a change in the thinking about how we manage particularly early Parkinson's disease. Unfortunately, that does not seem to have trickled down to the more rural areas, to lesser experts. So I think it's very important to when you're first diagnosed, when we first think that you may have Parkinson's disease, really to see an expert in movement disorders, an expert in Parkinson's disease.
Okay. John, I thank you, and good luck.
Any common law on that leg? I mentioned the restless leg syndrome.
Yes.
Patients with Parkinson's disease often have a symptom we call akathisia, which is a restlessness. You just can't get comfortable. You got to get up and move around. You just can't get comfortable. And again, 9 times out of 10, that can be effectively treated with aggressive treatment of the underlying Parkinson's disease.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for calling. And Jane in Wausau, it's your turn next. Hi, Jane.
Hi. About 10 years ago, a good friend of mine was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and based largely on her lack of response and adverse response to Parkinson drugs, after about 2 years, she was re-diagnosed with Lewy bodies. How do you know for certain when it's Parkinson's and not one of the other diseases that present oftentimes similar?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. We know that if for 100 patients that walk into the clinic with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, 75 out of 100 are going to have what we call idiopathic Parkinson's disease. This is the common garden variety. This is the kind that responds very well to the medications. About 25% of the time, it's going to be a different form of Parkinsonism. And sometimes the only way we know is that when we try medicines, they don't get better. With patients with idiopathic Parkinson's disease, 97% of them get better with medication. But with other conditions that look like Parkinson's disease, most of them do not. So your experience is what we often see in the clinic. We don't suspect these alternative atypical Parkinson's until the patient has failed on the medications.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Angel, it's your mom that has Parkinson's. What's it like to help care for a Parkinson's patient?
It's difficult. I think probably the hardest part is just watching the progression of her. She's much younger than she appears to be just because of the disease, wants to be much more active than she's able to be now because of the disease. So although I may only see her a couple of times a week, where my stepdad is caring for her on a day-to-day basis, just the medications themselves and the treatment and the care is difficult just to keep up with. One, because things change so often on the medical side, and because the disease itself progresses, you just never know when or how it's going to progress next. So that's sort of difficult. You can't really predict what the next step is going to be. I think as a family member, it's just hard watching her go through that because you can't fix it. So
the more you know about it, I guess, Dr. Montgomery, the better off you are as a family member or as a person with Parkinson's.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Again, I want to remind that there's a walk on Sunday, April 15th at East Town Mall beginning at noon. Chance, if you're in the Madison area, to participate. You can walk or sponsor a walker. Or you can register by going online to, apdawi.org or the Wisconsin chapter that Angel is president of right now. It's wichapterapda.org. And Just show up.
11 o'clock on the 15th.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. Appreciate it very
much.
Thank you.
Dr. Erwin Montgomery, professor of neurology and director of the Movement Disorder Program at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Angel Hodgson of Sun Prairie, president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson Disease Association. Let's all support them as much as we can. They're doing great work, and they need everyone's help to stamp this disease out. And thank you very much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.